This is not some secret. This is not some, like, holy cow, revelation, mic drop moment. No, 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 no. No, 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 no. Distance Radio, episode 1229 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Well, 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 here we are again, the end of another month. It means it's time for you to ask, me to answer. Time to do a little Q&A around here, which, of course, we do at the end of every month. But before we get into the questions, I want to talk a little bit about Magic Mind. If you've been around for the last couple months, you've heard me talk about Magic Mind a few times. It's a little shooter of nootropics that I take most every day. And it definitely helps out with focus and just, you know, being locked in, being more productive mentally. But and I've talked about some of those benefits before. I'll talk about those benefits again in the future. But one thing that I know I've experienced, maybe you've experienced as well, is when you get signed up for a subscription and then, you know, for whatever reason, one reason or another, you try to cancel it, try to move on, try to make an adjustment. Maybe you just want to hit pause for a little bit and come back or whatever. Maybe your subscription term is every couple months and you need it every 6 weeks. Whatever the case might be, sometimes these subscriptions these days, kind of a pain to adjust, to adapt, to you get on the phone and we can't adjust your thing over the internet. You got to get on the phone with somebody and it's a whole thing. And if you're like me, if it means getting on the phone with somebody, we're just not going to do it. We're just not going to just cancel the damn thing. I'm done with it. Not with Magic Mind. They make it super duper easy. You can manage your subscription by text message. What? It's 2024. We can manage by text messages. Yes, we can. They give you a text, a number to text. Bada boom, bada bam. You know, you got to have your account information, things like that. But you can handle all of the things. Pause, stop, cancel, speed up, adjust the terms, all via text message. Never have to talk to a person, which is, that's my jam right there. You can also do it via email, which, you know, sometimes a little bit easier to, if you're in your 40s or above, you still may not want to talk to somebody on the phone, but you also don't have the type of thumb dexterity to type everything out on your phone. So you can just type it up on a keyboard, send them an email. And again, with the right information, they'll ask a couple questions, but real super easy through the email to manage your subscription. And that's just, I mean, like I said, the product works. I've talked about it before. I get locked in, get focused, get more stuff done in a day than I sometimes get done in a week when I'm hopped up on Magic Mind. But overlooked, but very much appreciated, like massively appreciated, is how easy it is to adjust the subscription. In fact, I might need to adjust mine one of these days, get more shipped more frequently because it's just that freaking good that I'm going through these bottles like they're freaking, I don't know, like they're what? Like they're Krispy Kremes on a donut run. I'm just locked in getting stuff done. It's a good problem to have. And if you want to have a similar problem, go to magicmind.com/dizruns. That's magic, M-A-G-I-C, mind, MIND.com/dizruns. Sign up for, you know, get if you want to just order a one-off, you know, a box of, I think they come in boxes of 15, get yourself a box, test it out, and you'll be like, daggum, this was good. Now I need to sign up for a subscription. Then you go ahead and you get your subscription. Maybe you get 15 every month. You get 30 every month, whatever floats your boat. You can manage that all through your phone or through your email. Make sure you use the code DIZRUNS20 at checkout. If you do get a subscription, you can save up to 56% off of, you know, depending on the different subscription services. You get 20% off no matter what using DIZ20. Even if you're just on the one-off, you get 20% off there. And if you end up with a subscription, based on the discounts of the subscription cost plus the 20% off, you can end up with 56% off your subscription order from using the code DIZRUNS20 at checkout. And the link, magicmind.com/dizrun. So get on board, manage your subscription easily via text or email, or, you know, you can go log in through the website. I mean, that's an option too, but who has time for that in 2024? Well, you'll have time with it with Magic Mind because you'll be focused and able, but super easy via text and email as well. So thanks to Magic Mind for supporting the show. Thanks, y'all, for supporting Magic Mind and supporting your own brain health and function and focus and energy levels. Now that I am already hopped up on some Magic Mind, let's get into this month's question. So, like we said already, we do this every month. If you've been around for a while, you know that. If you're new around here, if you have a question that you would like me to answer, I was going to say ask. You're the one who has to ask the question. If you have a question to ask for me to answer, the best way to do so is to join the Facebook group, dizruns.com/Facebook. You can also shoot me an email or a message on social media with your questions. I try not to lose them. Sometimes it happens. In the Facebook group, however, there's a post that says, what are your questions? You put your questions in the comments. They're all in one place. They don't get lost. Bada boom, bada bam. Here we go. So jumping in. First question this month from my man, Rob Jones, coming back after getting his, hopefully, are we officially cancer-free now, Rob? Hopefully so, but on the mend. And first question from Rob. You mentioned that you write reviews for shoes and basically get shoes for free in exchange for the time to do the review. Is there a way for a normal person to get in such a deal? Or do you have to be an expert? Or is there a secret handshake or Reese's egg bribe required? Just curious, as I'll be ramping up some miles later this summer. I feel like I'm a normal person, but ultimately, like, it was just something I kind of stumbled into sort of accidentally, sort of luckily, I guess. I don't know if you were around or not, Rob, maybe you might've been, but, runningshoesguru.com, which is the website I write for, they sponsored some episodes a while back. And when we were talking about doing some sponsorship and kind of getting to know Ruggiero, who's the head guru there. I was like, dude, I'll write some reviews for you if you want. And I wrote like one sample review on a pair of shoes that I had. And he was like, that's good enough. Let's do this. And the rest has been history. So ultimately, you know, maybe a little bit of a right place at the right time. I'm an expert in some things. I'm not sure that I'm an exact shoe expert. Ultimately, like, it was maybe a little bit of a secret handshake. I didn't bribe with any Reese's eggs, but, that's not a bad thing to think about. But I do know that there are, you know, different companies and things like that have programs, where you can be a shoe tester and you can write reviews. And obviously it's, you know, sometimes there's thousands of people in the pool, so it's not like you're guaranteed to get shoes very regularly. But, you know, read the fine print. Just search, you know, scroll to the bottom of the website pages and see what kind of links, you know, be a wear tester, sample shoes, whatever. But I don't know. It was very much a right place, right time scenario, and then I just, you know, had the nerve to ask if I could be part of the team. And I got on board, and I don't know how many of us there are at Runny Shoes Guru. I think there's probably 20-ish reviewers, something like that. They review a lot of shoes. I don't know. You know, there's a way for a normal person is to just be at the right place at the right time, I guess, which I was fortunate enough to be. It's paid off in spades. Although, you know, every once in a while I get a pair of shoes I don't really like. And typically it's not because it's a bad pair of shoes. It's just not the right shoes for me. I've been fortunate. It's been a minute since I bought a pair of shoes for myself, and, hopefully I'll keep writing good reviews. Accurate reviews, you know, hopefully mostly positive reviews, but quality reviews, you know, talking about the shoes, and keep being part of that crew. Cause yeah, it's, you know, running shoes, they were never super cheap, but I feel like they've gotten more expensive recently. And thankfully I have been insulated from that increase in cost. So yeah, good, you know, poke around, find different shoe review sites and see if they have a spot at the, you know, on the website to apply to review some shoes. And you never know. And I mean, you know, I'm not trying to pimp some of our competition from Running Shoes Guru. But obviously we're not the only website, not the only situation where shoe reviews are part of the mix. I don't know. I don't even know if we're taking people. I honestly don't know. But you could look and see if there's any information there and go from there. But it's an all right gig. That is for sure. But thanks for the questions, Robin. And quite frankly, y'all, you know, this isn't a paid advertisement from Running Shoes Guru, but while we're on the subject, you know, if you're in the market for new shoes, if you're wondering about an update on a shoe, you know, your favorite shoe comes out with version, you know, 43, and you're like, is this the same as 42 or is it a massive difference from 42? You know, check out Running Shoes Guru. Somebody's probably either already done the review or working on it. And the reviews are, I like to think they're pretty thorough, pretty quality. And we'll answer some of those questions about your shoes for you. So there's a plug for runningshoesguru.com. You're welcome. You're welcome, Ruggiero. But thanks for the question, Rob. Next up from Jen. When you're training for a 24-hour race, should your training be more focused on time on feet or on distance covered? It doesn't even matter if you're not really super fast. Just trying to wrap my head around it since it's a new adventure I'm thinking about taking. Thanks. So, Jen, I think it's one of those where it's kind of like the answer is yes, right? Like I don't think that it really matters one or the other. But it's definitely about volume. It's about volume. So if you want to measure your volume and time on feet, great. If you want to measure your volume and distance, great. But you just need to keep working on getting some of that volume ramped up. And it's a lot like training. And I don't know what your exact history is in terms of, you know, have you run ultras and things of that nature, like what the farthest type of distances you've done. But you know, it's not like training for, you know, a half marathon or some of the distances, maybe even a little bit shorter than that, where it's like, you know, you might do the majority of the distance in training. You know, you might go up to 10 or 11 miles for a half marathon. So even for your first half marathon, it's not uncommon to get at least a 10 mile run in, right? With these longer distance races, whether it's an ultra distance race or a timed race, like a 24 hour race, it's not like you're going to have a workout where you're like, all right, well, you're training for this 24 hour race. You need to run for 18 hours or something like that to get there, 20 hours to get close to 24 hours. Like, no. That's too much for most normal people, whether you're faster, slower, or in between. You know, most of us have things going on in our worlds, right? We have our families, our work, our life, and just like pressing pause for a day on a month out from a race, we're already pressing pause on the day for the race and probably a day or two to recover. So you're not going to necessarily do that because it's just going to take too much out of you. So you're going to over time try to get more and more volume in, whether that's, you know, back-to-back long runs or, you know, just again, whether you're talking, you know, 15 miles and 15 miles or 20 miles and 20 miles or whatever the distance, or whether you're talking, you know, 4 hours and 4 hours. It doesn't particularly matter as long as you're getting the volume. And again, whether it's by time, whether it's by distance, I know that sometimes for some of the folks that I'm working with, I will prioritize time over distance, because sometimes if they do distance, they get a little bit too focused on, well, you know, I've got 3 hours, but you know, I've only got to do however many miles and I can get that done in 2 hours and 15 minutes if I push the pace a little bit. No, I want you to run for 3 hours, right? And so then maybe they end up still only getting 15 miles, which is, you know, maybe what I might would have scheduled anyway, but they keep those miles nice and easy, which is important when we're trying to pump up the miles, especially with, again, with back to backs or with more miles during the week or however it shakes out, however it fits your schedule. Obviously you want time on feet, and whether you're focusing on just the time on your feet in training or distance covered or a combination of both or whatever is not super imperative. Keep the effort level, you know, your intensity level low to moderate, build up that resistance to just being up and moving for, you know, and running on tired legs, which is where a back-to-back scenario type it can be very helpful. Or even if it's a double on the same day, you know, if that fits better into your life where you do a certain chunk of miles in the morning and then kind of go about the afternoon or whatever and get another chunk of miles in the evening or a chunk of time, however. But you need to get that volume for sure, especially, you know, relative to how far you're anticipating going, right? Like if you're going to do, you know, whatever your goal might be for 24 hours, for the time of that 24 hours, you know, you kind of want to train for that type of a scenario. So I know it's kind of wishy-washy, but there is some variable there. I'm resisting to say the D word, which is not that D word, but, you know, most of, you don't need to grab your shot glasses yet. We'll get there. But it does kind of vary, if you will, based on your history, based on your training currently, based on what your goals might be. But definitely getting some more volume in is a good idea for sure. But thank you for the question, m'lady, and hope that you're able to start wrapping your head around it. And good luck on the adventure, because it's a challenge. But from what I've heard, I've never done a 24-hour race yet. That's something that's on my list, though. But I've heard that they're pretty good time. So I hope you enjoy it. Next up, from the treadmill of the Pacific Northeast, goodness gracious, no, wrong, Diz. because the Pacific is not in the Northeast. That's the Atlantic in the Northeast. The Pacific Northwest. Treadmill up in the Pacific Northwest. Thessaly asks, what tips or advice do you give to someone who is going to play Sherpa at a race in a big city? My boyfriend is coming with me to Boston, but he's not running with me, and I'm not sure what to tell him to do. I'm sure I'm overthinking it. So, Thessaly, frankly, this question threw me for a loop a little bit at first, because to me, a Sherpa would be, you know, that runner that's running with you and kind of helping to guide you through the race or help support you through the race. But I feel like you're saying more like who's playing, you know, race super cheerleader, super spectator. Which again, I mean, it's just a verbiage difference. It just took me a second to kind of wrap my head around exactly what you're asking. But yeah, I mean, in a big city race, it can be a little bit tricky, at least with Boston, from as I understand it. And I know that Chris kind of slid in the comments there and gave you some good suggestions. She's a Boston spectator veteran, also a Boston marathon runner veteran. So she had some really good practical tips, which I would not have because I have not been there. But I think the big thing is to kind of have a plan, right? Especially if he's going to try to see you in a couple different places, which can be doable even on a point-to-point race, you know, depending on public transit and things like that. You know, to kind of know where the T would be, you know, which is the train there in Boston. Kind of, you know, where is one stop and where can I get to the next stop, and how can make sure you can get to the stations to get on the platform, to get on the train, to move ahead. And just kind of have an idea of what times and where and things like that. Also, certainly a good idea for a big city race like that with however many 27,000 people to have a plan for after the race, which is probably something that you're already on board with and kind of, you know, meet me at, you know, such and such a, you know, restaurant or bar or back at the hotel or whatever the case might be. But don't just try to be at the finish line area because that's not going to work. So someplace that you can move to, that you can get through the finish line, pick up your medal and whatever. And then make your way to where he's going to be, a little bit outside of the hubbub, the to-do, if you will, of the finish line. Because even having phones there, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where there's 50,000 people downtown, like 50,000 more people right in that area, and cell signal probably is going to be fine, but at the same time, could be an issue. So just having those plans in place, subject to change, but fairly well nailed down is probably a good idea. And then just, you know, kind of, to me, it's one of those, like, just, it's a lot of hurry up and wait, right? And I don't know if he's had any experience of spectating at a race before, especially a big city race, but kind of paying a little bit of attention to, like, who, if there's somebody that stands out that's shortly in front of you, which is hard to know, but if he's going to move around a few times, you know, and there's, you know, whatever, there's the guy in the Maryland flag running singlet, you know, because that's, it's just the Maryland flag, right? It is what it is. You Maryland people, you're proud of your flag. Woo! It's a thing, but it stands out, right? So if you see something like that, and then 3 minutes later he sees you, then he can kind of connect that in the dots. So when he moves to the next spot, in theory, the Maryland flag guy runs by, you're probably not going to be too far behind. You just try to make it a little bit easier to see. I know that I've played that game. When I've spectated for Rebecca at Disney races, where it's like, you know, I'm watching everybody go by, and then when I see her, I move to the next place, and it's like, all right, well, I recognize that person, I remember that person, I remember seeing that person. Oh, there, here comes Rebecca again. So you start to kind of have a little bit of an idea of where she might be based on the other runners in the crowd. So he might have that same ability with you. But again, in a race with 27,000 people that are all moving pretty good, it might not always be as straightforward as that. So just, you know, do the best, kind of check in, certainly, you know, track you with whatever tracking setup is available so that and have an idea of where he is on the course. So, because there's always a chance he could miss you, right? Like that's happened at races before. And so if he's standing there waiting for you and all of a sudden he gets the alert that you're at the 10K mark and he's at mile five, he can be like, all right, well, time to move. I missed her. Let's rock and roll. So that hopefully he can be in front of where you are and see you again at the next time. So lots of planning, but I don't have any specifics with Boston because I've never even been to the city, let alone there for the race. So glad for Chris and some other folks who have jumped in with some suggestions. Go with their information for sure. But yeah, good luck to him to keep up with you, and I hope you have a great race, lady. Enjoy yourself out there, and can't wait to see that unicorn medal. In our bling post that will be up, you know, I guess you could put it in the one from the day before since the race on Monday, or you can save it for the week later. Your call, or post it for both. I don't care. Post it for both. That's fine, too. But thanks for the question. Hope the treadmill is treating you well at the moment, assuming you're running at the moment. Anyway, next up from Dylan. What should every runner have with them, both on their person and in their drop bag, for an ultra? I've run 7 ultras at this point, but the most I ever carry is my handheld water bottle and maybe some Swedish fish. If I need nutrition or first aid, I always get it at the aid stations. Other runners always express surprise to see me so underpacked, and I'm wondering whether I should start taking more with me as I become more serious about these types of races. So we tried to delay, folks, but it is time. Grab your glasses, because, Dylan, what should you carry with you? Well, my friend, it depends. It depends on what you should carry with you for an ultra. Because, yeah, I mean, you know, like obviously some runners just want more things, and some runners are more minimalist in terms of what they need. Some runners are you know, have a little bit more of a particular stomach in terms of what kind of fuel works best, what sets well on their stomach, helps to avoid GI issues, things of that nature. So, you know, they want to make sure that they're carrying things with them or packing them in their drop bags, because they don't want to rely on the aid stations. Some of us, sounds like maybe you're in this camp, and certainly myself, blessed with relatively, you know, iron guts, at least on race day. So, you know, I'm pretty much good to go. If there's something at the aid station, I can probably handle it, right? Whether it's fruit, whether it's candies, whether it's salted potatoes, whether it's broth, like, you know, I can just trust myself to be like, whatever sounds good, whatever is appealing, I can take it and not have to worry about any type of GI issues. So I don't need to carry much fuel either, you know? But yeah, you know, if you know that you're going to chafe a lot, you might bring your chafing stuff with you. But if clearly you know that that's not a problem for you, you don't need to bring that stuff. So, I mean, it really does depend. I think that this is one of those situations where, you know, there's no reason to try to keep up with the Joneses, if you will. Just because people are giving you the side eye and being like, my gosh, dude, how are you running this 50K, this 50 mile, this whatever the distance is, with nothing but your handheld and your little, you know, package of Swedish fish? You're like, well, I mean, you know, whatever. Like I'm just fine. I'm doing fine. Thanks. You know, and obviously, again, you're going to want to double check the course specifics and make sure that, you know, if you've got a route or a race where there's an aid station every 3 or 4 miles, you know, like, you can probably get away with not really needing to carry too much because you're never that far away, right? But if it's a route where there's maybe an aid station, you know, some points they're 5 miles apart, some points they're 8 miles apart, well, then maybe you do want to carry a little bit more, because there's going to be more chance to need something in between aid stations. And what's the terrain like? You know, what is the likelihood of you know, tumbling down the side of a mountain versus relatively flat on a trail? And, like, yeah, you could fall and skin up your knee or whatever, have a little issue, but, like, you really don't need to, like, you don't need to carry a first aid kit with you, because even if you get a little blood running down, like, whatever, you can limp the next mile to the aid station, you know, that type of thing. So I don't know. I mean, I think that ultimately the answer is that you should carry what you feel like you need. And the more extremely raced, the more prepared you want to be. Also, you know, there is something to be said about what your ambitions are, what your goals are in the race. If you're really trying to race hard, like, you probably don't want to pack in, you know, 5 pounds worth of gear and food and you know, a hydration bladder when like a little handheld is more than enough, because you can fill it up every 35, 40 minutes at the aid station. So, versus if you're just taking your sweet old time, which, again, nothing wrong with that, but you're out there to enjoy the race and your 50K is going to take you 10 hours. I mean, that, again, awesome. There is zero judgment there, but you're taking your time. So you might, you know, your time to cover the 3 or 4 miles between aid stations might be, you know, an hour and 10 minutes versus yours, Dylan, might be 25 minutes or 35 minutes. So, again, you're going to have more time between aid stations. You might want to carry more things. Like, it's just you do you. You do you is the answer here. And I will say this, especially if there's drop bags, you know, in those situations, because you're not carrying things, put in everything, right? Like, the more things that you never know what you might need. And again, you know, it depends on what the weather forecast is like, what the course is. There a bunch of water crossings? Well, then you probably don't really need to bring dry shoes. I mean, you might want to, but, like, if you're just going to put on dry shoes and 3 miles later you're going to be going back through another creek crossing, your shoes are going to be wet again. So like maybe it's not worth it. If there's a bunch of water crossings in the first half of the race, then you get to the drop bag and it should be dry trail for the rest of it. Well, then maybe it makes perfect sense to bring an extra pair of shoes, dry socks, things like that. Put them in your drop bag. You're not going to carry that with you, but put it in your drop bag so that you can change out and like you got all the water crossings out of the way. We got dry trail the rest of the way in front of us. Let's take the 5 minutes or whatever, the 3 minutes to put on some dry shoes and socks and have dry feet the rest of the way. Like to me, that makes sense. So, you know, I know I've said before where it's like trail races are so much, there's so much variation even in the same race year to year because of the conditions of the trail, because of the role that, you know, the environment and weather plays in it, not just the weather during the race, but like, you know, I had a friend of the show and athlete that I've coached, Melinda Howard, had a race a few weeks ago and she posted pictures all over the place. So I don't mind saying this, where like a couple of years ago, she ran this race and it was like a little creek crossing that you could pretty much just step across. And then they had a bunch of rain the week before the race and it was like hip deep water. Well, you know, that changes the calculus of what you might want to bring with you, what you might not want to bring with you, or what you feel like you're going to need that day. So, you know, you pay attention to the updates from the race organizers, especially when it comes to a trail race. And maybe sometimes you pack a little bit more, and sometimes a handheld and a little package of Swedish fish is more than enough for 50K or however long you're going. So yeah, I mean, it's a great question, Dylan, but it's one of those questions that it depends because there's just so many variables at play, not only runner to runner, but race to race and what the conditions are. You know, if it's an early spring or late fall race, you might need to have some different layers because it might be pretty cold at the start of the race and it might be pretty darn warm halfway through. And so you might want to have different clothes to change into or things like that. I mean, there's just so many considerations to bring into the equation when you're going to be out there for 5, 6, 8, 10, 15 hours, depending on what the distance is. So yeah, it depends, my friend. It depends. But great question. And I mean, keep on keeping on because I feel like it wasn't too long ago that you hadn't even dipped your toes into the ultra waters. And now you've got 7 down. Who knows how many to go? Love it. I love it, brother. Keep it up. Next up, we got the Lewis questions, which we'll humor my friend Lewis today. We'll humor my friend Lewis. First up from Lewis, what do you think of Camille Herron breaking the men's 6-day world record? I mean, she's a beast. But we knew she was a beast when she was on the podcast 9 years ago, right? Like, and so I like to think, you know, I like to think that she got the Diz Runs bump back in 2015 or whenever it was, maybe 2016 when she was on the podcast. Back before she had like even really, I don't even think she maybe run one ultra at the time, just barely started to dip her toes in the ultra water. We gave her that little nudge. We gave her that little nudge back in episode 60 or whatever it was. And look at her now. Look at her now. So yeah, a little bit of Diz Runs boost to Camille. Not that she needed it because she's a freaking beast. Clearly. Question number two, what do you think of Kenenisa or however you say his name, Bekele, still running pro at age of 41? I mean, okay, the dude's a stud. End of. Question three from Lewis, how many milligrams of caffeine is sufficient for us 5K runners? He says shot glass time. I know. I mean, you know, all of them. You know, I mean, like, I'm not quite sure if you're asking for, you know, like, what is it enough to give you a boost? But like, it doesn't matter, you know, if you're not a caffeine guy, if you're not a coffee guy, then zero, right? If you're like me, like six pots is usually sufficient. Like, I don't know. Whatever works for you, it doesn't matter. Like, don't overthink things here. If you like your coffee in the morning, then have your coffee in the morning. If not, then don't. You know, you're running a 5K, so already I'm questioning your judgment. So, you know, you probably don't even want your coffee because you're, I don't know. Maybe you do. I don't want to get too judgy on every aspect of your life just because you're a 5K guy, Lewis. You know, I don't want to do that. I don't want to jump to the wrong conclusions. But as much, you know, I'm team caffeine. The more the merrier. But I, you know, if you have issues with too much caffeine, then don't drink too much caffeine. But I don't even know how many milligrams are in a shot of coffee or whatever. like not enough is the answer to me. So there you go. Take what you need for caffeine. Take what you want for caffeine. You don't need any of it. You might need all of it. Up to you. But thanks for the questions, my friend. Next up from Michelle, you have convinced me to go all in on heart rate training. My question is how strides fit in. I've always been told that strides should be added onto the end of an easy run because they are short and non-taxing. If I stay easy for the run, is it okay for the heart rate to spike a little bit at the end? Yeah, for the most part. I even tend to mix my strides in the middle of a run when I do them, which is not as often as I probably should. But I think it also depends a little bit if you're going to do it mid-run versus at the end of a run, kind of where your heart rate is in relation to, you know, kind of the heart rate zones that you're trying to stay in. For me, I usually have enough of a gap that even when I spike my heart rate for those short bursts of strides, my heart rate still doesn't really go above my target limit. So I don't stress about it, right? But if you're kind of running up towards the top end of your heart rate zone anyway, then yeah, just save them for the end, just like you would normally do. Mix them in, you know, once, twice a week, whatever. So, you know, like you said, they're not that big of a deal. They're short, they're not super taxing, but they certainly help with your form and turnover and things like that. So mix them in a couple times a week at the end of your run, no harm, no foul. You're still going to see the benefits. And, I think you meant to say thank you for convincing you to go in all in on heart rate training. So you're welcome. You're welcome, Michelle. But in all seriousness, stick with it. I know it can be slow to feel like you're making progress, but the progress becomes undeniable the longer you stick with it. So keep on keeping on, mix the strides in at the end and you'll be just fine. Next up from Carol, she says, ditto the above question regarding heart rate training. I'm unclear on what is acceptable. Well, maybe not unclear. I just need reinforcement to stay low. I did follow your general guidance that a heart rate strap monitor is a better choice than the optical reader of the Garmin. I didn't actually believe that there would be a big difference, but there is. Thanks for that input. Sometimes learning and changing ideas is more challenging than imagined. So no real question there, Carol, but you're welcome. And I'm glad that you noticed the difference because it's not always the difference that you want it to see, is often the case, but accuracy matters with heart rate training. So stay the course, keep it under control, mix in those strides once in a while, you'll be fine. And of course, if you have questions along the way, Carol, or more questions for yourself as well, Michelle, or anybody else, heart rate training questions, you know I'm down for the cause. Feel free to ask anytime, but keep it up, ladies, keep it up. Next up from Alex, how long should your longest training run be to just finish a marathon? Hope you've refilled your glasses, folks, because it is time, once again, for me to say that it depends. It depends. You know, Alex, and it's a very fair question. You know, it's a very fair question. But there's a lot of variance here based on what your history is as a runner. If it's your first marathon, you know, I mean, it still is going to vary. It depends. It's still a fair answer. But how long your longest training run needs to be for your first marathon versus how long your longest training run needs to be for your 10th marathon, for your 20th marathon, when there's not a time goal, when you're not stressing about performance, but you just, you know, want to get out there and cruise and finish. I feel like for me at this point, I would love to get an 18 or 20 miler in if I was eyeballing a race that I wasn't racing, but just, you know, just going to go out there and try to run a solid time and have fun and enjoy myself. But I don't know that I would need to get that long. But I've been there and done that enough times that, like, meh, you know, although again, for me, it's been long enough that I have, since I've done a marathon, that, like, I really wouldn't mind kicking the tires a little bit longer. I will say this. When it's your first time running a marathon, that period of unknown between your longest, at least in my experience, that period of unknown between my longest training run and the finish line, like, I mean, it's unknown, right? And so there is a little bit of scariness there. And so not saying that you need to do 24, 25 miles before a marathon, but the closer you can get, if you can get up to 20, if you can get up to 21... not that you have to, not that you should, not that you need to, but anything you can do to trim down on the amount of time between I've done X before and I need to get to, you know, 26.2 minus X. So that distance between your longest training run and the finish line, the less amount of time that you're in that uncharted waters, I think is helpful. Not necessary, but helpful. But I mean, I don't know if you know my story too much, Alex. I'm not going to bore everybody with all the details. But my first marathon, I finished it. I finished it. My longest training one was about 14 miles leading up to it. Would not recommend only doing 14 miles in your longest training run to your marathon, but I was able to finish it, right? And I know that there's plenty of people that have run a marathon with less than 14 miles for their long run. So, you know, you can go into a marathon grossly undertrained and still get through to the finish line. It's not pretty. It's not advisable. You can do it. But of course, the more prepared you are, the holistically, not just the long run, but the more prepared you are in terms of consistency in your training and doing all the things, fueling your body, getting sleep, recovery, all those types of things, the prettier the finish line photos are going to be. So good luck, but it depends. You know, I think if you can get into 18 to 20 mile territory, you'll be fine, but you know, to each their own, and certainly, touching 20, 21 is not a bad thing for sure. Even with the goal just to finish, just because again, it's just less unknown territory between mile 21 and 26 than there is if you top out at 16. Now you got 10 miles of unknown, and that's a lot of unknown mileage, on race day. But, good luck to you one way or the other. Next question from Alex, what is your fuel source for a marathon? So, I mean, potato chips, maybe I wouldn't recommend that, but, I have a strong, I don't know, life motto, race motto of, never say no to potato chips on race day. I certainly don't carry potato chips with me because they'd just be potato crumbs. Ain't nobody got time for that. But, if I go through an aid station, or, you know, you tell I've been doing too much trail and ultra running when I call water stops aid stations. But if there's potato chips available on race day, I am taking some. Just something about that salt crispy goodness is delicious. But that's, you know, I don't do a lot of fueling on race day. I'm one of those guys. All the influencers hate me, and all the whatever, all the nutritionists and dietitians think that I'm doing it wrong and killing myself, and they're wrong. They're wrong. But you know, I usually have some Tailwind in a water bottle, a couple of potato chips, maybe a orange wedge or a banana slice, and that's about it. That's about it. My go-to fuel source, in all seriousness, is body fat. You know, I'm fat adapted. I run on body fat, supplement a little bit with some simple carbs as I go. If you're not down with the fat adaption cause, that's fine. But it's hard for me to answer that question because that's what works for me, and it works very, very well. Contrary to what some people might tell you, it does work very well for me. Finally, question from Alex: going to Disney, staying at Art of Animation, any must run to destinations or trails? Let's see. I was going to look this up before I recorded and forgot to. I believe that Art of Animation has like a little loop that's nothing too fancy. There's not a lot of sidewalks right there. Quite frankly, there's not a lot of sidewalks anywhere outside of the resort will have a sidewalk, but once you get outside of each individual resort situation, there's no sidewalks really on the roads. But I believe you're not too far for Caribbean Beach and from the Riviera. And there's some decent little, I mean, it's not like fancy trails, but like, you know, instead of 1 mile loops, you can get like a 3 mile loop if you kind of go around Caribbean Beach and Riviera, and things of that nature. So you can kind of explore a little bit if you want to. But if you can get to the boardwalk, like I love running on the boardwalk. It might be one of those that's it's pretty hard to run from Animation to the boardwalk. I think if memory serves, they're not exactly conducive to get to each other. I mean, they're not far, far away, but they're also not like easily accessible. But I do enjoy a good run on the boardwalk. Maybe you could take the Skyway to the studios and run from the studios down the trail towards the boardwalk and around kind of the back Epcot area. But again, like don't ruin your vacation for that. And you might probably couldn't do that first thing in the morning. But if opportunity to run at the boardwalk presents, like I always love running at the boardwalk. I know a lot of other folks do as well. So maybe that would be a good opportunity, But most of all, you know, just enjoy your vacation, my friend. Have fun. Have a magical time. Love me a good Disney story, though. So have fun there, my friend. Thanks for the questions, Alex. Next up, from Martin. Do you keep up with the Barkley marathons? No, not really. Obviously, as we're recording this after Barkley's is over, I mean, it was a story this year, and I wasn't trying to avoid it. I just don't care that much. But I got caught up in at least following a little bit. I wasn't hitting refresh. I wasn't following anybody. I was just waiting for you people that do care about it a little bit more to post something. So I was kind of keeping abreast on what was going on and who was out on the laps and obviously following Jasmine a little bit and hoping that she would finish, and she did. So, I mean, it was a great story, but like, no, I'm not one of the junkies, not by any stretch. And part two from Martin, if you had the chance, would you participate in said insanity? I mean, like, no, like I have zero desire. It's a crazy event. No, I want nothing to do with it. But, you know, if Laz showed up at my door and was like, dude, Diz, you want to run Barkley? I mean, would I say no? Like, I don't think I would say no, right? Like, you got to say yes. If the man comes up and he's, you know, smoking his whatever Marlboros or Camels or whatever, he's on my front door, ringing the doorbell and says, hey, do you want to come up to Tennessee in a few weeks to run Barkley? Like, no, I don't want to, but like, I mean, I'm probably going to. I'm not going to finish. I'm not going to come close. I'm probably not even going to finish a lap. But like, could you say no? Could anybody say no? Even though I have zero desire and don't want to, I'd still probably have to say yes, right? Yeah, you'd have to. But am I going to seek it out? Am I going to try to apply to some lottery or whatever? I mean, not even that you can, but assuming you could, no. No, 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 no. Zero desire at all. Because it, like you said, it is insane. No, I do not want anything to do with that race, but I wouldn't say no. So there you go. Thanks for the questions, Martin. Hope things are well up in the ATL. Next up, Rob's slipping back in with another question. Do you use any vitamins or daily supplements? If so, do you realize any significant benefit, and how do you tune them around your daily routine? So, you know, like I said earlier, I mean, this episode is you know, we got Magic Mind on board, and I do use, I mean, when they reached out, and I was like, I'd been looking for a nootropic, all right? So like what nootropics are, and I don't know what the exact definition is, but it's a supplement kind of supposed to help with brain health and focus and cognition and yada, 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 right? And I used to take one a while back, and the company, I think, went out of business. And so I haven't really had one for a while. And I was like, you know what? I just noticed that I have a hard time staying focused and staying locked in. So I was kind of looking for some, and I ordered one that's a pill form. I take that in the mornings, and I feel like it helps a little bit. I feel like it helps. I feel like it definitely helps. But it gets me through about 1 o'clock, and then I start to wane a little bit in terms of focus. And so when Magic Mind reached out, and I was like, well, I mean, I don't know if it makes sense to do as a, you know, with a running podcast, but like, I'll try it. And so I take that kind of midday, about 11 o'clock, take my pill form in the morning, Magic Mind midday. And like 1,000%, I notice 1,000%, it's a significant benefit. I'm locked in, I'm focused, I'm crushing. And I'm not just saying that because they're a sponsor, they're a partner, whatever. Like if I took it and I thought it was trash, like I wouldn't have said yes to the sponsorship, right? Like just straight up, like I wouldn't. So yeah, I mean, Magic Mind is legit. The days I don't take it, because I get 15 a month is what my subscription is. Just full disclosure. You know, I don't take them on the weekends, but like during the weeks, there's usually 20, 23 days during the week. I try to make sure I've got 15 or during the month, as far as weekdays, work days. So like, you know, I've got 15 of them covered. The days I don't take it, I definitely notice that I'm not that I can't work, not that I'm not focused, but it's just like, it's a little bit more effort to stay locked in. So those are two that I take. I have a protein shake most days. I take a multivitamin, vitamin D, and I, you know, as far as those types of vitamin supplements, whatever you want to call it. I mean, no, I don't notice anything day to day different. I'm just hoping that those kind of help fill in the gaps and help keep me healthy and make sure that, you know, I'm healthy and strong at 42 and at 43 and at 60 and 70 as well. So kind of playing the long game on those. But the nootropics, especially the Magic Mind, And again, I'm not getting into this additionally because they're sponsoring. I'm getting into this to answer your question. 1,000% it makes a difference for me. Now, you may or may not, you know, like sometimes it works better for some folks than others, whatever. At least in general, like, I mean, I don't know anybody who's tried Magic Mind and been like, no, that doesn't work for me. But you know, I absolutely do. And as such, I've figured out, you know, if I take my pill one in the morning, you know, like 6 o'clock in the morning before I go out for my run, 5:30, and then follow it up with a Magic Mind chaser somewhere between 11 and noon, I am locked in for the day and, you know, getting more done because of it. So yeah, it's worked out well for me. And if you want it to work out well for you, magicmind.com/DizRuns, DizRuns20 at checkout. Just a little reminder. But thanks for bringing that up, Rob. It worked out well that this was a sponsored episode, so I could dive into it even more. Next up, from north of the border, Brian asks, does sweat rate during exercise have more to do with fitness level or with genetics? Both and, I believe, quite frankly. I mean, I think that some people are absolutely more prone to excessive sweat, or at least, you know, sweat more volume-wise than others. And I think that's mostly, I mean, I'm pretty sure that's very much a genetic thing. But I think the fitness level plays a role, right? I think environment plays a role too, right? Like some folks, you know, depending on the environment you're in, but assuming the environment stays equal. So whether we're, you know, you obviously if you're in a hot place, you're going to sweat more. But I think if you're fit, you're probably going to sweat a little bit less, but it's still, the environment is still going to make a difference. And like, I mean, when we would run in Florida, and me and Kate, but when I would run with a group in Florida, I would certainly sweat some in the summertime, right? But there were guys that we ran with that, like, you would hear their feet squishing in their shoes after like 2 or 3 miles. They were just sweating like crazy, and they were fit. They were good, strong runners, faster, you know, super fast, good endurance, marathon runners, whatever. Like, I mean, I have no problem saying that they were more fit than I was. Probably still am, right? And they sweat 3 or 4 times as much as me in the same weather conditions. So clearly there's a genetic component there, right? It's just somehow how their body, their body's rate of generating heat, whatever, they sweat more. So yeah, there's variables to it. Some people are, of course, saltier sweater. They have more salt coming out than others. Depends on hydration level. You know, if you're very well hydrated, you're going to sweat a little bit more there as well, just because you have more liquid in the body to sweat out. A lot of variables there. And certainly no one size fits all sweat rate, which is why, you know, which is why it's not a bad idea to monitor that a little bit with, you know, weighing yourself before a workout and then afterwards to see how much you lost in sweat, so that you know what your rate might be. So you can kind of, especially if you have problems with it, in terms of like really fading during a race because you're sweating so much, having heat issues that way. Knowing how much to replenish with to try to keep yourself in a safe level. But yeah, there's definitely a genetic component, definitely a fitness level component. So it's kind of both, but thanks for the question, brother. Hope it's all good up in the Great White North. Just a few more questions left. And of course, one of those blocks has to come from the man, the myth, the legend, Gary Joe, the hat trick man himself, from Gary Joe Collins. So first up from Gary Joe, he says, my wife is a nurse practitioner and wants to give me an IV for hydration either before the Marshall Marathon in November or after. He says, I dehydrate easily. And so the question is, would it be better to do before to get ahead or after to catch up quicker? Man, you got a good wife, Gary Joe. She's coming to jam needles in you. You know, she's going to cheer you on and poke you with needles. You got yourself a winner. Not that you had any questions. We've already had these discussions. We both outkicked our coverage, as it were. But my wife doesn't jab me with needles and pump fluids into my body that way. So not that that makes her better or worse, but just, you know, that's just one area your wife's got you covered for sure. I mean, you know, I could make a strong argument for either option. I will say this, and I am in no way, shape, or form questioning your wife's ability to find a vein and tap into it. But it'll probably be easier to get the fluid in before the race, because if you do dehydrate a fair bit and your veins get a little bit smaller, a little bit harder to get into, even for a skilled phlebotomist slash nurse practitioner. But again, I mean, she's probably like, I'm not worried about her being able to do that. That's like the one consideration in my head. It would be easier to find a vein and get it going before the race. I mean, I think honestly, I kind of want to say both, right? Like she's qualified and capable. Why not hit an IV bag beforehand? In fact, you know what? I'm going to go with before as the answer. If you need one afterwards, you know, I'm sure she can bring a second bag, right? She can bring a second bag of saline. If you need it afterwards, then you can hit it afterwards. But you know, prevention versus cure, right? Like, let's go for prevention in this case. I talked myself into it. I was going to try to say both, you know, either or whatever. It doesn't matter. I think I talked myself into going before, because then if you sweat out a bunch, you know, going back to Brian's question, you know, if you're more likely to sweat a bunch and to dehydrate, you give yourself a little bit more of a cushion beforehand. And if you get to the end of the race and you're like, dang, yeah, I could probably use a little bit more. And she'll be like, all right, let's go. Saddle up, partner. Here comes another needle and another bag of saline. Then no worse for the wear. But if you just put all your eggs in the we'll just do it afterwards basket, and potentially there's a problem, right? Potentially you really do get dehydrated, really do have an issue there. And then we're struggling to catch up. So let's go before with the option, before for sure, option to take a second bag after the race if needed. But yeah, that's a nice ace up your sleeve to have the nurse practitioner wife that's like, yeah, I got the IVs, babe. Let's rock and roll. You're in good hands. Not that you needed me to tell you that. Second question from Gary Joe. I'm going to have a good base before I start training. Be running 5 or 6 days a week for this first marathon build. When should I start training in earnest? The race day is 11/3, so November the 3rd. So this is the cliche answer, but this is honestly my answer, bro. Start now. Not do anything different than you're doing. I mean, it's definitely still base building time, and you know, you're gonna, off the top of my head, we're gonna look back, you know, about 16, 18, 20 weeks, something like that. June, July is when you definitely are gonna be like, all right, we're focusing towards the marathon now. But the more work you do, the more consistent you are now. Like I would view running now through April, through May, as part of the training for that marathon. Now, maybe you're not ramping up. Maybe you're not doing anything specific for that race yet. But I just, you know, it's, I don't have a problem with nails on the chalkboard, but like that question of when do I start marathon training is a little bit of a nails on the chalkboard question for me. Cause it's like, well, now, when was the best time to plant a tree? 20 years ago. When is the next best time now? When is the best time to start training for your goal race? 6 months ago. When is the next best time? Now. Don't wait. So, but again, like, it's not like super focused. We're not trying to peak, whatever, but you just like, I feel like I'm always in training for the next race. Even though I have no idea when my next race is, I'm already training for it because, you know, the base that I'm doing now puts me ahead of the timeline in terms of whenever I would need to start focusing. It gives me more options and having options in terms of, it gives me more options in terms of jumping into a race in short order or really having a long build up, but like super focused and like, you know, potential to really time my peak training with race time, things like that. So yeah, start your training now. Even if it looks exactly the same as it did, whatever. Even if it's just this base building, instead of calling it, oh, I'm just base building now and I'll start training on July 1st. Like, no, you started training now, and this next 3 month window is base training as that phase of marathon training, if that makes sense. So apologies for getting worked up, but I, like I said, it's kind of a nails on the chalkboard question for me, which I realize now that next month, Melody is going to ask me 14 questions about when she should start training for whatever race, because Melody does those types of things. Love you, Melody. But yeah, now is the answer. Start training now. And then adapt your training as you get into that, you know, 4 month out window, 3 month out window, because it's going to keep changing as you get to the next level and the next progression. But maybe it's just my peculiarities, because we know I have a few of those, but I would say you're in marathon training now for sure. You signed up. You're in it. Speaking of which, question three is not a question or even foolishness per usual, just a statement. So it's not a hat trick of questions then. It's a brace. It's a brace of questions with a little comment here at the end. I don't so much fear what I've willingly paid $130 for. I know that the support of the tribe will take me to the finish, and I appreciate it deeply. You are getting in your feelings, bud, but we are here for you. We got you. Can't wait to hear how it goes. But thanks for the questions, as always. And we'll hopefully get a full three pack of questions, a full hat trick next month. But thanks Gary Joe, appreciate you. Next up, from two questions from Gary Joe to two more questions from a guy with two first names. Jason Dennis chiming in with two questions here. Question number one, for those of us streakers who run every day, which is the definition of streakers, but thank you for clarifying, Mr. Dennis, how many days a week of strength training would be appropriate? The simple answer is 2 to 3, because that's kind of what we need for just overall health, or that's optimal for kind of overall health and muscle building, muscle strength, which the more I hear about it, the more I read about it, the more I personally believe, my expert opinion, as it were, that as much as we all love running, there's the best thing we can do for our overall health as we get older is to have muscle mass. Not like bulking, hulking muscle mass, but like have muscle, right? So strength training 2-3 times a week at least is like probably the best thing we can do for our health. Doesn't matter if you're a run streaker, if you're a Pelotoner, if you are, you know, just run 4 or 5 times a week, whatever. Strength train. So yeah, 2 or 3 times at least. But there's also the variance in here of like, are we doing upper body and lower body? Are we doing full body every time? You probably want to try to hit all of the muscle groups at least twice a week. So however that, if you're going to do 2 good full body sessions, then twice a week is probably enough. If you're going to isolate upper and lower, then maybe you want to do 4 times a week so that you can get 2 uppers and 2 lowers, or however you want to work that out. But strength training is important for sure. And just because you're a run streaker doesn't mean you're like, oh, I don't need any, as much muscle, as much strength training. Nope, you still do. Because assuming you're going to, you know, try to be, assuming part of your plan, not just you, Jason, but all of us, assuming part of our plan is to, you know, be functional adults when we're 70 and 80 and maybe even 90, living independently, you know, able to maybe play with our grandkids or our great grandkids or whatever, you know, great nieces and nephews, whatever younger generations of our family might be around, might want to get down on the floor with them, might want to take the dog for a walk, things like that. You know, might want to still be able to get up and down off the toilet, which is kind of one of those, like the lowest bar you have to pass in order to live independently. All those things take muscle mass, take muscle strength, take the ability to move our bodies, that running may or may not support, but doing some squats, doing some lunges, doing some push-ups. Yeah. Those things are important for that. So yeah, you want to keep streaking, probably want to keep strength training too. They do go hand in hand. Next up from Jason Dennis, another question. Any marathons planned this year to advance your goal of a marathon in all 50 states? Yeah, I mean, you know the answer to this one, right? We don't need to dive into this. No, I don't have any plans. Hopefully something will happen. I was thinking about doing a couple of states on one weekend this spring. But as I'm looking at the calendar, that's like 6 weeks away. I mean, I still could probably make it happen, but like I haven't even like looked at the websites yet. So probably not going to make that happen. Yeah, I mean, I would like to, but I suck at making plans, dude. We all know this, right? This is not some secret. This is not some like, holy cow, revelation, mic drop moment. No. We all know that your boy does not make plans well. So yeah, we are currently planless when it comes to marathons in new states in 2024. You know, and just to put my own self on blast, because, well, why not? I do live in Georgia, as you're well aware. I still have not run a marathon in Georgia, so like there is very low hanging fruit that should be available. I just need to do something about it, so stay tuned. But there are no plans yet to announce. Really, we need my wife to make the plans. That's That's ultimately what it needs. We need to just say, hey, Rebecca, make some plans. Tell him where he's going to go run a state. Sign him up for it. Make it happen. Because left to my own devices, we'll be 50 years from now going, so you still have only run, 12 states. You might have run 100 marathons by then, but you probably haven't, ventured out. You probably got Georgia by then. You planning on running any other states anytime soon? I'm like, oh, yeah. Still trying to chase down 50 states. Haven't made plans yet for tomorrow. So who knows? Who knows what tomorrow might bring? I frustrate myself sometimes. I really do. It's hard being me, y'all. It is so hard being me. But thanks for the questions, Jason Dennis. Hope all is well on the west side of Georgia. All good over here on the east side. Next up, and finally, you know what that sound means. It is time once again for the Tom Trifecta. And it's been a while. It's been a while since we've had a Tom Trifecta to close out, to wrap up the monthly Q&A. But that is exactly what's happening today. Three questions from West New York, from the man, the myth, the legend, Tom Rankin. And we are done for today. First up from Tom. Your views on carbon fiber plated shoes are well known. Huh. Have I made my opinions known on carbon plated shoes? All right. What do you think about average runners who race in shoes that have a stack height that is higher than the legal limit of 40 millimeters? There are a few shoes out there that are 41 and 42. Just curious. I mean, I think it's pointless. I think it's foolish. Whatever. You do you. Like, I don't care. And I especially think, to your point about average runners, people like you and I, whatever little gains you're going to get from that, you could probably get more gains from, training a little bit more, training a little bit more intelligently, a little more focused on your training, maybe keeping your easy runs a little bit easier, maybe adding a few more miles, maybe doing a little more speed work, maybe tweaking some of your form to get some more spring from your actual mechanical body instead of trying to get it from the shoe, which could be the carbon plate, or from the extra stack height. That also then throws different forces at your body, which a lot of times, not always, but a lot of times causes issues and injuries and niggles, because it changes how the force is hitting the body. Whatever you do you, but I try not to speak too often in definitives around here. But if you see me in a picture running in a shoe that's got anywhere near 40 millimeters of drop, then you know that I'm being held hostage and this is my call for help. Like send the police, because otherwise, even if Running Shoes Guru sends me a pair of shoes to review that look like moon boots, I'm going to send them back and be like, guys, we got other people that can review these shoes. I am not going to be able to give these a good, honest review. So yeah, no, thank you. No, thank you. It just is ridiculous to me, but again, you do you. I think that for most of us, any potential benefit, there's more risk of injury that undermines the benefit. So not a fan. Next up from Tom, what do you suggest for races like New York City, where you have to get up really early and spend several hours traveling and then waiting to start? I specifically mean about how much to eat and when. For New York City last November, I ate a small meal in my hotel room, had an energy drink, a Morton drink at about 160 calories on the bus to Staten Island, and finally had a bagel and a granola bar at the start area. I was up at 4 a.m. and didn't start the race until around 10 a.m. that day. I mean, I think you did it probably about right, Tom, but that whole logistical scenario is a mess. Right? Boston's maybe not quite as bad, but it's similar. And that's a big part of the reason that my professional advice is to not try to race those races where the logistics are just so crazy. Right? Because even if the weather's great, and obviously you have good crowd support and there's tons of other runners, which can give you a boost and can make, a good race performance a little bit more likely, you're just so far out of your normal routine in terms of eating something, six, 7 hours before the race starts. Like when else do we do that? Right? Like that whole, and this is one of the reasons that I hate the never do anything new on race day advice. How often in your training are you like, I'm going to get up at 4 o'clock and eat something. Then I'm going to eat a little something else again at 6 o'clock, and then eat a little something else again at 8 o'clock, and then eat a little something else again at 9 o'clock. And now I'm going to start my long run at 10 o'clock. Like, you don't do that. I don't do that. I don't think you do that. I don't think anybody does that. It doesn't make any sense. It's food. Like, why would you do that? But on race day, you're going to have to, right? So to me, it's just like, that's one of those scenarios where it's just like, hey, we just roll with it. This is a major, you know, obviously it's a world major. It's a huge event. This is one of those races to just soak in the environment and have fun and not worry about my time, which then to me means that my fueling strategy can be a little bit more willy-nilly. It can be a little bit more loosey-goosey. You know, I don't want to do anything foolish versus, you know, I know we talked earlier about with Dylan's question that I'm pretty good to just kind of eat whatever. Not everybody is, but like, you know, whatever works for you on those type of days, you know, you kind of go with the flow as best you can, because it's just so far out of the norm that like, why would you put extra pressure on yourself to get your fueling locked in perfectly when there's just such logistical chaos that you have to deal with? So yeah, I mean, like I said, I think you did it right, but like, it's just not a good scenario because of the logistics. I'm sure it's a great race. I'm sure you had a great time. I mean, I've never had anybody say anything super negative about New York City other than it's a headache to get to the start line and wait around. So you roll with the punches the best you can. But it's just a tricky scenario for sure. And it sounds like you did well. So I would do something like that again in a similar environment, because what else can you do? Like, what else can you do? You can't like bring your portable stove with you to Staten Island, right? To cook us some eggs at 9:30 or at 8 o'clock or whatever. So you just do the best you can, and that's, you know, as Daniel Tiger once said, "Do your best, because the best is the best for you." You can tell that I, you know, maybe watched some Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood in my day. And by in my day, I mean in Addison's day, 6-7 years ago. Anyway, last question from Tom. Last question for this month. How would you feel about Dave Matthews if he became a spokesperson for Cadbury Eggs? Why do you got to do this to me, Tom? Like, why? Why do you got to do this to me? I don't know. I would not be a fan, but I give people grace, right? I try to give people grace. I like to think that my opinion about the Dave Matthews bands and their music would not be altered if he became a spokesperson for Cadbury Eggs. I can't say that for sure, but I can say I don't have to worry about it right now because it's a hypothetical, which means that I don't have to give a firm answer because there's no reason to worry about it right now until it happens. We'll cross that bridge when we get there, Tom. We'll cross that bridge when we get there. And hopefully we never get there. How about that? So there we go. That's it for this month. Thoughts. Look at this. Just a little over an hour. I hesitate to say this because I know how this works out. Y'all were slacking on the questions this month. I mean, they were good questions. They're just, you know, the quality, not sorry, the quantity. Quality was good. Quantity was down a little bit. I'm sure I'm going to regret this next month with the 2.5 hour Q&A episode. But for now, we'll take this hour and 10 minutes and get the heck out of here. Thoughts on this month's questions? What answers did you like? What questions did you like? What answers do you disagree with that you want to push back on? At DizRuns on the social medias, at DizRuns, or DizRuns@gmail.com for an email. DizRuns.com/1229. I'll get you back to the blog post for today. And you can feel free to chime in via the comment section down there at the bottom. Whatever works best for you works best for me. And if, like I said earlier, if you want to get your questions answered in a future Q&A episode, because we do this literally every month, join the Facebook group. That's the best way. DizRuns.com/Facebook, or just search for the DizRuns tribe. The next time you're scrolling around, wasting your life on the Book of Faces, join the Facebook group. We'll have some fun. We post some memes. We crack some jokes. And then middle of the month, I put out a post that says, what are your questions? You do as everyone here did today. Put them in the comments, and then I answer them at the end of the month. So we'll do this again next month, shall we? Until then, get yourself some Magic Mind if you haven't already. MagicMind.com/DizRuns is the link. DizRuns 20 will save you 20%, up to 56% if you get the fancy subscription scenario, which you can, again, you can adjust your subscription via text message. How great is 2024? Oh, love it. Love it. But thanks to Magic Mind for supporting the podcast, and thanks y'all for supporting those that support the show. And until next time, y'all, be well. Take good care. Thanks again for listening. If you enjoyed this one, hit that share button. Always appreciate when you do that. And we'll talk soon, right? Later, y'all.